Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sean Carey here and Steve on his way into the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In case you missed our conversation yesterday with Philadelphia Phillies 2017 number one pick Adam Haseley, who is now with the Williamsport Crosscutters. You can find that on our podcast page at stevejonesshow.com at the start of hour number two. And also our podcast is available on both Google Play and on iTunes, the Apple Podcast app. If you listen to us on Apple Podcast or iTunes, don't hesitate to leave us a review. You can also get in touch with us anytime with your emails, stevejones@wkok.com, stevejones@wkok.com. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at stevejonespsu, and our toll-free number, 1-800-795-9565. And we will have a little more Williamsport Crosscutters, New York Penn League conversation on today's show. The beat writer for the Crosscutters, Mitch Rupert from the Williamsport Sun Gazette, will join us at 4:06. By the way, this weekend is Lift for Life with Penn State football. It's been a great midsummer tradition, landing toward the middle of July, during the same time as the People's Choice Festival and the Central Pennsylvania Festival of the Arts, which takes place in downtown State College. Lift for Life will be going on too. So we'll get some Penn State football conversation in the mix as well. Bob Flounders, Bobby Flo from PennLive.com, will be joining us. Also tomorrow, we will have our sports business expert, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. He is scheduled to join us tomorrow. And later this week, terrific author, John U. Bacon, who about this time last year was in the process of writing a book with the late, great John Saunders of ESPN. And we'll have John U. Bacon on the show later this week. And, of course, we never start the weekend around here without a trip or without a visit, from Steve's brother, Kevin. Kevin will be checking in. Kevin Jones from Connecticut coming up on Friday at 4:35. So we look forward to that weekly visit with Steve's brother. Of course, between now and Friday, no baseball. Major League Baseball will be cranking up the second half of the regular season on Friday night. And this evening, you've got the Midsummer Nights Classic, the All-Star Game, day after the All-Star, the Home Run Derby from last night. What was that one shot that Aaron Judge had? Was it 503 feet?
513. He hit four home runs.
I gypped in 10 yards, sorry, or 10 feet, sorry.
Well, he hit four home runs over 500 last night.
Mm.
And think about the ones that didn't count. There are ones that didn't count last night. The balls that hit the roof and fell into the field are not home runs. They don't count. So it was quite a show last night. That was a lot of fun. It's quite a show. Mitch Rupert on the show today. Fun to talk with Mitch. And also we're going to talk with Bob Flounders, Tony Knopp tomorrow on the show. That is always
the absolute, the one that drives the suit
to... It takes all the fun from sports away from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sitting there on a Friday night, like he did this past fall, concentrating on special teams. It just... It takes all the fun out of it for him. Fun's gone. Because Tony talks about business, talks about money.
The reality check that...
Well, for him. Well, no, and I, you know what? I do understand where he's coming from. I mean, I understand that, that you know, that sports is supposed to be an escape. Remember, I believe it was Chief Justice Earl Warren. And he was the Chief Justice of the United States late 50s into the 60s. I think he made it into the early 70s. And they asked him about reading the newspaper, and he said, I always go to the sports page first. He said, I want to read about people's accomplishments and not about the problems of the world. Well, of course, today it's a bit different. Obviously, we read a lot about a lot of problems in sports. Well, times have changed. We've gone from that time, and this is where Kevin, you know, where I understand completely where Kevin Hurst is coming from when he says that. I mean, I always kidded him about it, but I always understood completely where he was coming from. You want to have that, I don't know, that escape, that, you know, what does my team need to do to get back in the race, you know, things like that. I mean, you're looking at that and not the problems. But then there's the reality of it, and this is why I have Tony on the show. The reality is, by having Tony on the show like we do, is that sports is a business. And the fact that it is a business, not covering the business side of it, not letting you know what the trends are, what's hot, what's not, what you can watch, what you may not be watching, where you may be able to find it, actually affects you, the consumer. And I think it's important for the consumer to know, you know, what's happening and why. Why is it, for example, that the International Olympic Committee today approved that they're going to let Paris and Los Angeles work it out as to who gets the 2024 Summer Games and who gets the 2028 Summer Games? That's unprecedented. It's unprecedented. But the two mayors who have worked together on climate change issues in the past, so they are at least familiar with one another, they're going to work out between the two of them which one will take the 2024 bid and which one will take 2028, and they're going to announce it in September. Now, for those wishing to go to the games, something you've always wanted to, it's part of the business. Can they pull it off? I mean, my guess is Paris gets 24 and LA gets 28. But that's part of it. How much you pay to attend an event? How much you pay to attend an event? Well, part of that is what kind of corporate partner support do they have? What kind of commercial support do they have? That affects how much you pay to go if you decide to go. It affects what the salaries are. Some leagues have a cap, some don't. So it affects that. So that's why we talk about the business side of it all the time. What's moving forward and why? We've talked often about MLS with Tony. Why have we talked often about MLS? Because there's a way that they're running it right now that is very millennial favorite and very family comfortable as to how they run it, the price structure of it, so forth. The fact that it also happens to be matches that take less than 2 hours. There's a lot of reasons why. And that's why we talk about these reasons. You know, corporations are trying to figure out where do they invest their money? Where do they do it? Do I want to put it into a golf tournament? Do I want to put it into the Lakers? Do I want to put it into the Mavericks? Do I want to put it into the Cowboys? Do I want to put it into the USGA? Where do I put my money? And do I think the Olympics are a hot buy? If so, why? And then I'm going to buy it. If I don't think so, am I going to stay away from it? And then there's the television component of it. Although I did see something last night on TV that was I just sat back and like shook my head. They were talking about McGregor and Mayweather. And I'm going to talk to Tony about this fight tomorrow. That the fight is $99 if you want it in HD. It's $89 if you want it in standard def. Like, there's a $10 difference, really? And then ESPN promoted that the pre-fight and post-fight press conferences would be on free TV. No, it's not on free TV. I pay every month. I don't know about you. I pay every month for ESPN. I think I'm paying, what, $8, $9 a month. So it's not on free TV, despite what they say. It's not on free TV. But they are... I mean, and I'm going to ask them about the pay-per-view part. And the intrigue of this. And what it means for the fight game.
And let the hype begin for this. I believe the initial press conference is going to be later today. And I heard it's going to be airing live on FS2. And then FS1 is going to replay it tonight at midnight.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it... And look, then it comes out why Mayweather's doing this. He has a 2015 IRS bill. Now, for people like you and me, where you're trying your best to work within some confines of a budget. I mean, I just paid for a wedding and then had my brother on the air complain to me I didn't buy him dinner the night before.
Excuse me, I was washing dishes till 4 a.m.
Look at the wrinkles on my hands, man. It just seems inconceivable to me that you can get $220 million for a fight like he did with Pacquiao. It's what he got, right? $220. Does that sound right? He made at least $100 million on that fight, right? Mayweather did? It's kind of hard for all of us to sit there and to kind of relate to the fact that he needs to take this fight for all these millions and millions to pay for his tax bill. Huh? Wow. I don't know. But supposedly that's the reason he's doing it. But again, I'll talk to Tony about this and about, you know, about the fight game, about pay-per-view, you know, where the money goes. Is it a good buy for corporate investors to get involved in this? What kind of audience do they expect for it? And again, it's, you know, you didn't buy the Mayweather Pacquiao fight, right?
I did not, no, and have not even watched it.
Yeah, neither have I. I have no idea. Nope. I just know. I guess what they came out, circled around, went back, came out, circled around, went back.
Yeah, the fight grossed something like $600 million, and Floyd made somewhere between $220 and $230.
Okay, so I said $220. Okay, so it's close. And again, we can't relate to that. But is the boxing game, which on the surface looks like it's working its way down the ladder of popularity? We'll find out from Tony. But this is why we have him on the show. Again, going back to the original premise of the suit, it feels like Tony, for example, for him, takes away the enjoyment when we talk about the business part. But and I understand that completely. I've never once not understood where he's coming from, that the that fantasy allure of sports being games and competitive and things like that. But the bottom line is, it really is a business. It really is a business. And that's why we talk to him about it, because in the end, it rolls back in your direction as the fan. Let's see. For Penn State, next week, let's see. What day are they going to do this? Monday, Tuesday, July 24th, 25th, 2 weeks from now. They'll have the Big Ten Media Days, and Penn State will have Marcus Allen, Jason Kubinda, and Mike Gesicki going there along with James Franklin. So that'll be part of what's going on in 2 weeks. I know I already had to turn in my ballot for five players of influence in the East, five players of influence in the West. Bob Flounders, next half hour, News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. So Tony will be on the show tomorrow. Bob Flounders on the next half hour from the Patriot News and PennLive.com. Plenty to talk to him about as we hit toward the middle of July with the arts festivals here this week. I know that, as you know, I've been in search of a certain piece of what I consider to be signature art. I'm looking for a painting of dogs smoking cigars while playing poker.
True slice of Americana.
I will look. I'm not rigid in my taste here. If it happens to be dogs smoking cigars while playing billiards, I would accept that too.
Sure.
Every time I make that joke, the artsy people get very mad at me.
It's not what we have here. It's gas station art.
Then fine, send me the gas station hats.
Don't insult the gas station people. Come on.
Come on, man. Ah. I'll bet any amount if I were in the South and went to a Waffle House, they'd have it. Just a thought. I mean, maybe they'd have two. I could pick you up one.
Sure. Got room.
See, that's what I like. You're a guy of personal taste. Like my brother gave me that portrait of the three Stooges playing golf. Now that's more of who we are.
Four city blocks of new Ford trucks. Over 40,000 trucks sold. SMC is where you want to be. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 110 new Ford trucks. And during July, they'll include a complimentary accessory package with the purchase of any new F-150. Through July 31st, receive a tonneau cover, molded splash guards, and window deflectors at no additional charge. SMC is where you want to be because they have the largest selection of new Ford trucks in all of Central Pennsylvania.
And that means the biggest savings.
Take up to
$13,500 off on new F-150s. And SMC has them starting as low as $23,919. Save up to $7,000 on 2017 Ford Escapes, and they're slashed as low as $19,380. Explorers, Edges, and Expeditions have discounts up to $11,000. SMC is where you want to be in July for this mega summer spectacular sale and the complimentary F-150 accessory package. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
F-150 accessory package valued at $699. Excludes prior sales and ordered units.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Bob Flounders in a few minutes. Mitch Rupert in the next half hour. Tony Knopp coming up tomorrow. John Bacon later in the week. I think that sums it up, right? I didn't miss anybody, right?
No, we're good. But you know me, I'm always working on three or four at a time.
I got to talk to you about when the next break.
Okay.
1914 on this date, Babe Ruth debuted in the major leagues with the Red Sox. 1960, the first tournament held outside the continental U.S., sanctioned by the USGA, began in Honolulu. 1985, Nolan Ryan became the first major league pitcher to earn 4,000 strikeouts in a career. 1987, Bo Jackson signed a contract to play football for the LA Raiders for 5 years. He was also continuing his baseball career with the Kansas City Royals. Shane Eckert, 1994, sentenced in Portland, Oregon to 18 months in prison for his role in the attack on figure skater Nancy Kerrigan. 1995, Mickey Mantle made his final public appearance. It was to increase awareness of organ donation programs. I'll never forget that, too, because you know Mantle, somebody asked him about being a role model, and he said, look, he says, I'll be honest with you. He said, I never once felt like a role model. He said, and he was, at this point, he had lost a lot of weight. And he says, does this look like a role model? All right. Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Bob, it is always great to talk with you. The Live for Life is coming up this week, so a lot of fans will come out for that to get their first look as to how everything has gone. For you, in terms of how you track a summer, is that something that you look at all, or is it just to you another event?
I think there's a real curiosity about Live for Life, only because you kind of really get a little bit of a look at the freshmen that arrived that didn't participate in spring drill. They're only going to go through some strength training there and some competition. But you know, there's always a curiosity about some of the guys and whether or not they look the part physically of guys that could help them. You know, maybe in August and. Certainly there are some Penn State players that are arriving. Penn State is a much deeper team now, Steve, so I don't think the need is there to rush anyone onto the field. Not that Penn State did that before, but from a curiosity standpoint, you know, getting to look at some of the guys that actually kind of, you know, they almost looked like they were ready to play, late in their high school season. You know, a guy like C.J. Thorpe, guys like that, you want to probably see a little bit of Sean Clifford, who's coming off, a pretty eventful surgery to his throwing shoulder. So I think this year, not to read too much into it, but I think it's always neat, not only for the media, but for the fans, to kind of get their first look at what these guys kind of look like up close.
I was listening to an interview earlier today with Bill Hancock. He was interviewed by Chris Childers and Rick Neuheisel on Sirius XM. And he was talking, and the first topic that Rick Neuheisel brought up was Penn State, Ohio State from last year. Now, the fun part for Penn State fans is obviously the fact that Penn State is deeply in the conversation in this particular July for the first time in a long time. And he brought up specifically that Ohio State played Oklahoma and went on the road. Now, it really helped, too, that they beat Oklahoma and did it decisively. But that does bring up in a 9-game conference schedule. How do you feel about the scheduling of Pitt in terms of looking at it on a national basis?
I mean, it's kind of it's a tough one because Pitt is, I think Pitt is a game that almost every Penn State fan wants to see on their schedule. The question is, you know, moving forward, and I know that there's only the series, it's not a series that's going to go on for much longer unless there's an extension, but how much does it really help Penn State? I think last year, obviously, had they beaten Pitt, that might have been enough. I don't know, Steve. My only question about, I just remember last year at everyone brought up, you know, after Penn State had beaten Ohio State, everyone had brought up, well, Ohio State owned a non-conference win at Oklahoma, and that was, you know, that was supposed to be the deciding factor. But I just think that, you know, teams have to pass the eyeball test late in the season, and I don't know. I think that most people outside of the state of Ohio who didn't play for Ohio State looked at that Ohio State team late last year, and I don't think it was really the same team that began the year for whatever reason.
Agreed.
They had not developed offensively, and, you know, they were really fortunate, I thought, to beat Michigan. I just feel like it's great to have that on your resume, but I don't know about you, Steve. I really thought they were in all kinds of trouble against Clemson because of the way they were playing late in the year, and I think it's just another factor that I don't know how you put that into the equation. But to me, I actually thought, Steve, that of the teams in the Big Ten that were in the discussion, you know, Ohio State, even Michigan and Penn State, I thought Ohio State was the third best team in the bunch.
Well, and you look at the Ohio State-Michigan game. Michigan did not win it. They lost the game in overtime.
Right.
So in the end, they didn't have more points.
Right.
But in terms of the play, and
right.
I watched enough of it. I mean, obviously, there was, I'm on the air, so I couldn't see.
Sure.
But when I watched it, at least in terms of the level of play, Michigan looked like the better team. Is that fair?
Yeah, that was definitely the fair. I hate to say it, but it's a tough cross to bear. I don't cover Michigan, but what I had seen from them not only in that game and in the Iowa game, if they had gotten just adequate play from their quarterback,
yes.
I mean, that was a good team, but he didn't make the plays against Ohio State and against Iowa, and actually he kept those teams in the game. I just thought, you know, there's a reason why all those guys got drafted off the Michigan team. That was a very, very solid, very deep team that if they got up on you, you were in trouble. But, yeah, I totally agree with you. I thought they were the better team, and there were some interesting calls in that game, as there always are in the Ohio State-Michigan game, that probably didn't help Michigan. But, yeah, Ohio State, to me, just wasn't really worthy of being one of the top four teams last year. I thought it was clear to a lot of people, other than maybe the people that are Ohio State fans and some of the national commentators that played at Ohio State.
When you look at the season coming up in this conference, does this conference lack depth of quality quarterbacks that can take a team the next step through? We know what McSorley is, really good. Barrett has proven himself over a period of time. After that, who in the East is there? Maybe Lego of Indiana? And in the West, is it Lee of Nebraska? It just doesn't seem to me like there's an incredible depth of great quarterbacks in this league. You've got a core group of four or five out of 14.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that maybe people judge they hold that against some Big Ten teams when it comes to talking about that stuff. JT Barrett, I thought, for whatever reason, and I think it's not a coincidence that Urban Meyer made that switch and brought Kevin Wilson in,
yeah,
to coordinate the offense. I mean, he is a dynamic player, or he's been a dynamic player, but he was not a dynamic player during the second half of the season. he got hit a lot. The offensive line, I think, probably hindered his ability to make plays. But as a quarterback, as a throwing quarterback,
I don't want to say he's regressed, but he has not really developed, and I think that's really hurt Ohio State's offense. Jim Harbaugh doesn't want a dual threat quarterback, it looks like, or at least he isn't recruiting one, or he doesn't have one on the roster. I think that hurts Michigan. Trace has a chance, if he can continue to develop, to kind of become, the clear-cut best quarterback in the Big Ten if he can stay healthy. I think it's a big if because of the way that he plays. And I know that I'm sure Penn State is thrilled to have such a great insurance policy in Tommy Stevens. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the Big Ten, it's such a great conference for producing talent at the next level, but not really the one position maybe they're not really known for is the quarterback position. It looks like it's going to be that way again, too, but I'm sure there'll be a player or two that jumps up.
Yeah, and we'll see how it plays out during the course of the year. You're right. There may be somebody that all of a sudden they hit stride and then they become a really confident player. 2 years ago, now not last year, but 2 years ago, C.J. Beathard was really that kind of guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the quarterback play really hurt Iowa last year, I thought. So you just don't know. But right now, if you're looking at the guys who are going to make a strong run at all conference honors, Trace, after what he did last year, I think he was the second team All Big Ten quarterback, and he probably could have been first. With the offense and the weapons that he has at his disposal, he's going to put up some really, really nice numbers, and it's going to be tough to match him, I think.
I was asked earlier today when I was a guest on a talk show in Atlanta about Penn State and the receiving corps with Godwin going to the NFL. And I talked about the outside guys, at what Blacknall had done, Hamilton. I mentioned Juwan Johnson and Tompkins. Mike Gesicki, when you watched his development last year, what do you see in him and how much better do you think he even can be?
I think one of the best things that Mike has going for him this year, Steve, is that John Holland looks like he's a guy that Penn State could put on the field maybe without Mike, and they might not miss much. I thought that Mike, the athleticism's never been in question. I think that maybe he just needed to get a little bit stronger and also B, his confidence. Once he became a little bit more confident and he earned the confidence of both Trace and Joe Moorhead to kind of call some plays for him, I think that helped. But I also think as the year went on, he got beat up. They didn't really trust anyone else to play. And I think if John Holland can take some of the burden off Mike, I could foresee a scenario where maybe the catches aren't as many, but maybe there's more touchdown catches, and maybe he's a more unstoppable weapon because he's going to be fresh. And I just think that not less is more, but I think that he could be a better player and maybe not get targeted. Maybe they don't have to target him, 6 to 8 times a game. I think he had 48 catches. That's an awful high number for a tight end, and they have so many other options. But I'm really interested to see what John Holland could do. And I think if he develops, I think it'll really help Mike stay fresh, especially during the final month of the season, because I think he was really playing through some pretty difficult nagging injuries.
So it'll be a year, Bob, where they take out two-a-days. The last few years with Penn State, they would not have two-a-days during summer session of classes, and then they would not have two-a-days once fall session began. Well, that left them about a week. So they had three, quote, scheduled two-a-days. But what they're doing is they're also pushing back when you start practice. How do you view this of one-a-days, no more two-a-days?
Yeah, I mean, especially at Penn State, it's been a little different. Other than last year, I think that both James and even Bill O'Brien before him, they were kind of forced to manage the roster because of scholarship reduction.
Right.
That I don't know how much that actually went on, even when you were allowed to do it, because they were really trying to preserve the best guys. They couldn't really afford to take an injury or two in practice. I just remember the blue-white game when Zach Swinak broke his wrist, I believe, in 2013, and that really, I think, impacted Penn State's offense a little bit early in that season. or I don't, maybe that, yeah, it was 2013 that happened. Yeah. I don't know. I think that the coaching staff will figure that out. I don't know that it is a huge problem for Penn State. You know,
I just think it lengthens the preseason.
I do think that they want to try and develop Miles Sanders. I do think that they probably want to get as many reps as they can for Tommy Stevens. And I know they have some young players they want to get fast-tracked, especially some young players like McGovern at center and Michael Mennett at guard. But I do think that it will not, I think that they will come up with a plan, and I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal, I think, as some suspect.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal at all, except that it lengthens the preseason. Because they had the same number of practices, they just tacked them onto the front.
I mean,
there is, to me, you need to manage a preseason. Only because it's just, and if it's a longer preseason, that brings with it more, okay, when do we need a break? When do they need some time off? When do we need them to work them hard? After we're done working them hard, when do we need to give them some time? I mean, so I think there's a lot more management there.
Yeah, and there might be, and I kind of feel like, isn't the general rule, the closer you get to the season, you want to keep these guys fresh in their life. So I think if there's going to be some management, it'll probably be early in camp or in the middle of camp, because I think at the end of camp, even if they have to practice, you're going to see some guys. They're going to back off with some guys because they just have to, but. More days of practice, I guess, is what you're saying, but less strenuous days of practice.
Yeah, same number. I mean, you know, it could be a two-a-day, for example, where the first one was a special teams practice and then the one in the afternoon's more. That's the way some coaches over the years have done it. That's the way Joe did it for years, where he'd have some two-a-days and the morning practice was a special teams practice. Doesn't mean you're not working hard. You are, but still. And you also have to, you have to manage the heat as well.
Yes.
Bob, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for the time.
Okay, take care, Steve.
Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. Next half hour, Mitch Rupert, back with more in a moment, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Our thanks to Bob Flounders. Check it out in the Steve Jones Show podcast. And next half hour, Mitch Rupert, Tony Knopp on the show tomorrow. So the All-Star game is tonight. Be fun to see. You're looking forward to seeing like a Scherzer versus an Aaron Judge kind of matchup, or Chris Sale, against Cody Bellinger, something, along those lines that you may not see on a regular basis in sports. So it's going to be, and that'll be tonight at Marlins Park. You also probably don't get a chance to see a lot of Marlins Park with the Big Fish Monument in center field. It is exactly on the same spot as the old Orange Bowl. That's where they built it. They tore down the Orange Bowl to build this park. So that'll be tonight. I guess, what is it, Jeffrey Lurie? Jeffrey Loria, the owner of the Marlins. I guess is suing some fans over something. Did you see that? All right, next half hour, Mitch Rupert. Looking forward to talking with him. Great guy. Kept you up to date with what's going on in the New York Penn League and other minor league news. Tony Knopp tomorrow.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.